The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good day. Thanks for being with us. Amin El-Hassan will jump on board today from ESPN. Always like having Amin on. Amin is very good and very direct about how the Suns have been a mess and they finally have found themselves a head coach. I'll give my thoughts on the head coach here in a minute, but we'll have Amin with us from ESPN coming up at 10:20. Haley Stasiak is down at the Diamondbacks today. Haley's going to check in from down there. They have activated Steven Souza Jr., which is big news, and some other stuff with Haley. She's at the Diamondbacks a ton, along with Jordan Hamm. We'll want to dive deep with her on some things. And then we'll have Goody at the Movies, as we always do. You need to know what's going on, not just in the world of sports here locally, but also the movies that are coming out. I do want to talk to Bill about Kurt Warner being passed over for Jason Witten by ESPN for Monday Night Football. Jason Witten is going to be the new Monday Night Football analyst. Kurt Warner finished second from all reports. We're going to talk to, I'll weigh in on that too. Talk to Bill about that. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind, brought to you by Sagicor Now. What should be on your mind is life insurance, guys. When was the last time you looked into life insurance? Sagicor Now. You log on to Sagicor Now and get your free quote. No medical, no waiting. You can just go there, and you've got to protect your family and those that you love around you if something were to happen to you. Do it with life insurance at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. All right, so, you know, the Diamondbacks lost last night. The stadium stuff I'll get to in a bit. Really, the stadium thing in a nutshell, so there's a memo of understanding out. The Diamondbacks can control what they put inside the stadium and whether they stay or not. This really, to me, is not the big story. The big story is they want to be at the 101-202, and the reasons are many. I've talked about them for over a year now, that there's a real concern about their Monday through Thursday crowds, and I'll get into that a little bit later, too. Igor Kukoskov is the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns. This came out yesterday. Igor was here at a time when the Suns were relevant, at a time when the Suns were entertaining, at a time where the Suns were a franchise that everybody wanted to play for, and head coaches wanted to line up and become the next guy of the Phoenix Suns. This is no slight towards Igor. Igor has never coached in the NBA. Igor has coached overseas. If you're one of those that's going to try to convince me that coaching overseas is just the same as coaching in the NBA, you need to put down the bottle, plain and simple. Quit nipping on the cooking cherry. Igor Kukoskov is a very good tactician. That all sounds well and good. Nobody knows. Nobody at the Suns is going to be able to tell me, we got this hiring nailed. No, because you've had way too many hires that you've sat there and said all the right things and they didn't do it. Igor Kukoskov could be just like anybody else that's come in here under the Robert Sarver era. He does know what he's getting into. I get that. His agent, Bill Duffy, has a relationship with the organization. Whether he did or didn't have an organizational influence in directing players and so on and so forth, the facts are he's trying to get his client hired and get his client to go to the NBA to be a head coach. Igor has never been a head coach. So guess what, Phoenix? Once again, we are a training ground. We want to be a head coach. We've never been a head coach. Hey, come to Phoenix and you're going to be a head coach. And we're going to give you the opportunity. And if we're on this topic of why the organization has been so dysfunctional for so long, it's because of moves like this. And I'll say, I don't know if this is a bad move or a good move. What I do know, and what you would have to admit to on this, does Igor have any previous NBA head coaching experience? The answer is no, but he's coached over. No, that doesn't matter to me. Coaching in Europe does not count. Oh, you're just hating on this. You're not embracing. No, I'm not hating on this. I'm being factual. He has zero head coaching experience. So once again, the organization is left with, well, let's go get somebody. Maybe that person was right here. If you're one of those that today wants to say, well, Jay Triano was a bad hire. No, you're probably one of those that was wearing purple and orange and was touting how great the move was. Jay was given a chance to be a head coach. here in Phoenix. Jay had been a head coach. Jay had done some things in the NBA outside of being an assistant. And so, you know, when I sit here and I see the news yesterday, I don't know if he's going to be a good coach. I would like to see them get out of this ditch. If you think I like coming on here every day and saying today is 2,899 days since the Suns had a playoff game, you're sadly mistaken. But guess what? It's going to clear 3,000. And the Suns are going to roll Igor out when they do, when the Jazz get eliminated, if they get eliminated by Houston, and they won last night. And they're going to say that, you know, we are on our timeline. We've always said we have the timeline, the timeline, the timeline. And next year it'd be great if the Suns won 30 games or 35 games. And they're going to point to the marked improvement. And that means it's going to be another year of me saying it's now 3,500, 3,600, 3,700 days. And by year two, if Igor gets them into the playoffs, that's a pretty good trajectory. And they'd be happy in the very first year being an 8 seed or a 7 seed and getting into the first or second round. And then they're going to say, well, this is the third year of Igor. And if it all, again, this is assuming it all works out perfect. In the third year, if they get to the second or third round, and miraculously, if they get to the finals, then it's, wow, we really nailed this hire. But you tell me, in the balance of power in the NBA's Western Conference, are we seeing the makings of an organization that is going to stay true to the course, that is being run efficiently from top to bottom, other than just the simple fact of making a lot of money? That, to me, is not the organization that is the most efficient. It may be if you're making sandwiches in your industry, that is the most efficient way to go out and make money. I get that. It better be a good sandwich. And when it's a good sandwich, people will come back again and again and again. But in the world of sports, it's different. You can be the owner that has a lot of money and put a crappy product out there, and fans, for some reason, will still watch or still show up. And you'll get away with it. And that's what's gone on here. So Phoenix, here's the headline, top line deal on this. Phoenix shouldn't be a training wheel city for an NBA head coach. The line to get this job, how long was it? It wasn't any longer than this desk I'm sitting at. It didn't go down the hall and to the right and to the left. And so, and Igor may be a great hire. They might have nailed it, but you don't know. I don't know. I just know that this organization at one point in time could attract any free agent, and at one point in time could attract pretty much any guy that wanted to be a head coach. And instead, they're settling again for a, well, this might work out. We believe totally in this hire. He has a proven track record. No, he doesn't. He's never been a head coach. So let's stop the cheerleading and let's call it as it is. I'm not going to boo the guy. Not going to sit here and hate on him, but I am going to point out when it's day number 3,425 that we haven't had a playoff game here. Because Robert has made it like this. It's the important, the unfortunate side. The Washington Redskins cheerleader story, I got to get into that at some point. You talk about sick. And some of you guys, man, oh, I get it. Guys look at girls and they oogle. I got it. Some of you do. Some of you look at females in a way that's just how you're wired. I can look at attractive girls too. I can't believe a sports organization would ask their cheerleaders to remove their tops with sponsors on a calendar shoot in 2013. There is cave, there is man. Come on. And so this whole thing of cheerleaders has now become a debate too with what's gone on in Washington. The Diamondbacks lost a game last night. It's going to happen. They left some runners in scoring position, and it was about it. So some of the things on my mind in the world of sports. Again, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Amin El-Hassan is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the partnership with them as we stream on both sides. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona tonight, Brad Sussmat, football AZ with 16 airings per week. Amin El-Hassan, nice enough to come back on board, ESPN's NBA insider, co-host of The Jump, about the Suns hiring. Igor comes on board. Igor Kukoskov is the new head coach of the Phoenix Suns. Amin, thanks for joining us. What is your takeaway on the hiring of Igor?
Well, I think they made a great move. It was a great hire. First of all, you know, you have to take your hat off to them for going through the right hiring process, because we've seen too many times in the Suns' recent history of just hiring the next dude who was behind the bench or whoever it was. And so they took their time, and they tried to get, I think, a nice variety of candidates, from guys who've been established like Mike Budenholzer to and Steve Clifford to, you know, in names that are maybe not have as much brand recognition in among households like James Borrego and, of course, Igor. But ultimately, Igor was the right choice for multiple reasons. First of all, he's an excellent coach. As a player development guy, as a guy who helps young players get better, there are scores of guys all over the league who all swear by Igor. I of course, worked with Igor from 2008 to 2012 in Phoenix, and I saw firsthand the work that he did with Goran Dragic and making him not only a complete player, but a confident player. One of the funniest things is people don't remember this. When we drafted Goran Dragic, he couldn't shoot. He was a guy that got by on his athleticism in Europe. And by his second year, he was shooting in the high 30s in three-point percentage. That's all from the work he did with Igor every day, night in and night out. And so, great player development guy. But also, he had a lot of experience as a head coach coaching national teams in Europe. So he coached the Georgian national team and brought them from basically – what would amount to, it's like taking the D3 team to D1.
Mm-hmm.
He built that program up as the head coach there. And then, obviously, last summer, we all know, he coached Slovenia to win its first gold medal at the European Championships, which was a huge deal, of course, and with Goran Dragic and presumably top three pick Luka Doncic
right.
on that team. And so he's got head coaching experience. It's just not traditional. And then finally, he's got a wealth of NBA experience. This isn't a David Blatt situation or kind of a guy coming in when nobody knows about. You know, Igor started his coaching career in the NBA with the Clippers, actually with Alvin Gentry in L.A. with the Clippers. And then from there, he went to Detroit. He won a championship on Larry Brown's staff. And then from there, he obviously came to us in Phoenix and was reunited with Alvin again. So he's been around some great basketball minds. He's won championships, not only that gold medal with the European Championships, not only that NBA championship with Larry Brown in 2004 in Detroit, but also a world championship in basketball for Yugoslavia in 2002, the team that won the world championship that was in Indianapolis. If you can remember, Craig, that was the USA team that had Paul Pierce and a bunch of other guys
right.
that didn't even medal. That Yugoslavia team, he was on that staff. And so this is a guy who's been around winning and success for a long time.
Okay, let me run through a few things with you, Amin, on what you said. And all of it's well thought out and well put. Could Jay Triano have been a better decision to keep him? Was he put in an impossible situation versus blowing him out and bringing Igor in here? What's the difference, I guess?
Jay's a hell of a coach. Let me just start there. But obviously, if you're talking about culture change and changing the environment around this team, it's really hard to do that with incumbents. And that's not a knock on Jay, and I'm not blaming him for that. But the guys show up in the locker room next year, and how do they know that anything's changed? Mm-hmm. They really don't, other than coach got a contract. So that's part of like the crappy part, I guess, about NBA coaching. It can be not your fault at all.
Which it wasn't.
It can't be part of the solution in that sense. The other thing, and I really feel strongly about this, if Igor were anywhere else, maybe this conversation doesn't happen, but I think there's a level of familiarity that's baked into this,
mm-hmm.
that Robert Sarver knows who Igor is, has seen him, knows what he's about. That Jared Dudley is a guy who played and developed under Igor, who swears by him, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know he was pushing a lot behind the scenes for Igor. And then you talk about the people that Robert may confide in, people like Steve Nash, people like Grant Hill, great basketball minds, and they all feel the same about Igor. I think all of those things contribute to Igor having a shot here that maybe if he, I just rattled off his resume, but instead of Phoenix, we're talking about Milwaukee. Maybe that doesn't resonate in Milwaukee because he doesn't have those ties. But because he has those ties to the organization from the past, I think that really gave him a leg up.
Now, that's fair. That's fair. Should Phoenix be a training ground to be an NBA head coach? Phoenix, I mean, has turned into this space. Is this unfair of me? I'm pointing this at Robert. He's taken a once proud franchise, and it's not like this job had people lined up down the street to get it. And this isn't directed towards Igor, but should Phoenix be a training ground to be an NBA head coach?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by that. Do you mean by the idea that guys with less experience come get this job? Is that what you're leaning towards?
I mean, if we look at the last few years, those last few hires, and I get what you're saying about Igor coaching overseas, but it's not the NBA overseas, right? He does have some coaching experience, but it's not the NBA. So I guess I'm looking at it saying there was not, outside of Budenholzer, there wasn't like a lot of people with previous experience and a lot of experience lining up to come here to Phoenix, because Robert's turned this into something where a guy like Igor, this is great for him, and it may be the best hire. Right. But should it be a training ground?
I would say there's two different things. First of all, you can absolutely say that in terms of the previous hires, because Earl Watson had a grand total of 40 games under his belt as an assistant before he was made a head coach. Jeff Hornacek was a part-time assistant coach, I want to say, in Utah. Like, he wasn't there every day in, day out. He would fly in and fly out, and then he was made a head coach. And then before him, Lindsey Hunter, again, a guy who had been an assistant coach, I want to say, for maybe a year or two in Chicago, and then was behind the bench in Phoenix, wasn't even technically an assistant coach. And so those are the dudes that they've had a process or lack thereof and hired in the past. You go before that, it's Alvin Gentry. Now, Alvin had a bunch of experience, and Alvin had success. Mm-hmm. And so we can see that their process has not been sound. And that's, again, that's not a knock on Jeff or Earl, right? But I'm just saying, in terms of, you say, oh, these guys didn't really have that much experience as a training ground, but I would point to any coaching experience. Mm-hmm. Those three names I just gave you, they had very little coaching experience of any kind. Igor's been an assistant coach in this league since 2000.
Got it.
Right? He's been around the NBA. This isn't, like I said, it's not David Blatt, oh, I won championships in Europe. This is a guy who's ingrained in NBA culture, who you go to guys all across the league and say, what do you think of Igor? What do you think of Igor? What do you think of Igor? And they've got nothing but great things to say. So he's very experienced, and I don't have a doubt about that. But in terms of, if you're saying from a brand name perspective, why can't Phoenix bring brand names? I think that's very, very simple. I think people look at this job as a trap job, meaning it may look like they got a little bit of talent, but more often than not, they find a way to mess it up, and then I get blamed and I have a horrible record coming out of it. So if I'm a name brand coach, then I'm saying either you got to pay me a lot of money to make this worth my while, which we know is not really the thing that they do in Phoenix, or you have to give me an immense amount of power, president of basketball ops, along with being a head coach. And I don't think the Suns are ready to do that, and I don't blame them either. Philosophically, I don't agree with being president and head coach in this league. I don't think you can do it well.
Yeah.
So once you've eliminated, I'm not going to compensate you to your name, and I'm not going to give you power for your name, then obviously the marquee guys are like, well, why am I wasting my time here? I can go make a lot of money in New York, or I can go to Milwaukee and coach like a team that is ready to win in the very near future. Phoenix kind of lags behind those other options there if you're a head coach.
A couple other questions I'll let you go. And I really appreciate your candor and your honesty on all this stuff. And I didn't expect any less, I mean. So Doncic and Igor, let's go through that now. Does this change the lottery? We obviously, next week we'll find out, the 15th. But if they're in a position and they have the number one or number two, do they pass on Ayton and take Doncic? Is this, in your mind, a lean in that direction from the organization?
Well, I'll tell you, in terms of intel and knowing about a player and a prospect, which oftentimes that's the deciding factor, because a lot of us can see the guy. I mean, let's be clear. When you're talking about top three picks, we know the talent. We can see the talent. The differentiator is personality, what the drive, and all these intangibles that are really hard to gauge from afar, that you only get through background research or talking to people, and obviously your interactions with the player, limited as they may be, through the pre-draft process. So having Igor there gives you a much clearer insight of Doncic as a prospect. Mm-hmm. I don't think that automatically means they take Doncic. And I don't think Igor, I know Igor very well, he's not the kind of guy to say, well, I coached him, so you got to take that guy. As opposed to the other guy who may be just as good, if not better, but since I didn't coach him, I'm not gonna hype him up. I'm going to kind of pick out. That's not how Igor is. He's a very even-keeled, very level-headed guy. And so whatever decision the organization takes, he's going to work with whatever they give him. So I think Doncic gets an advantage just in the sense that they'll have a clearer, more complete picture of who he is as a prospect, as opposed to a little bit more mystery with some of the other guys. But I don't think it means slam dunk to taking Doncic.
Okay, when you look at this roster, and again, assuming they get the number one, number two, even the number three pick, let's just go number one pick. Looking at this roster and looking at Igor's hire, who makes the most sense of those three names I mentioned earlier?
Doncic, Ayton, what was the third name?
Ayton and Bagley, Marvin Bagley.
Bagley. And that's tough because it's all in the eyes of the beholder. Like, some people say that, you know, Phoenix really needs a big, right? And Ayton is a modern big, meaning finish around the basket, rebound well, but also stretch it out, shoot threes, be a forward-facing kind of face-the-basket kind of player. So, you know, and obviously being an elite athlete, that helps too. So I can see how that fits perfectly. If you talk about Doncic, it's something different, right? It's Phoenix is one of the worst teams in terms of passing the ball, in terms of sharing the ball, in terms of just forget assists, just the ball moving around. Obviously, Doncic is in Europe, he's a point guard. He'll be a wing player here in the NBA, but he's an excellent passer. And what we've seen from our time with, like, Steve Nash, or you look around the league right now, guys like Nikola Jokic, or teams like the Warriors, passing is it's infectious. When guys are throwing passes, everyone wants to get move the ball, and that sharing atmosphere is a lot easier when there's someone who comes across and says, no, this is how I like to play. Mm. And so they could definitely use a Doncic from that aspect. And then for Bagley, I think Bagley, to me, is behind those two. But in a weird way, I'm most sure about what Bagley is going to be as an NBA player. Mm. His ceiling is a little lower, I think, than those two. But his floor is much higher. Because this is a guy who's going to work hard and be out there, be in the right position all the time, be an excellent rebounder, be an excellent finisher. I got to watch him last summer in the Drew League, playing against NBA pros and international pros, and you would not know that this was a high school student who was going to be starting his freshman year in college. Right. He held his own out there, not only just the toughness, and he's really tough, but just smart. Like, he plays within himself, he doesn't overextend, and that usually for a young player, you don't see that kind of maturity happening out there. And then obviously he's got the local connection, being, you know, the hometown kid. So different things you get from the different guys, but I would put Ayton and Doncic just a slight step ahead of Bagley in terms of their ceiling.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting out here. I mean, it really is, especially if they're the number one pick and now with Igor coming on board. Anything else you want to add? I haven't asked you about Igor that you're like, Brad, here's the thing. Or are you emptied your tank with me already?
Well, I would say, you know, when you talk about Igor, what makes him I was actually on with Gambo the other day, mm-hmm. On KTAR, and I was telling him the thing about Igor is he's positive without being corny. Because it's very easy for people to be like, I'm positive. It's a very rah-rah, cheesy way that makes players roll their eyes. Igor's not that. Like I said, he's a very even-keeled, even-tempered guy, so his positivity comes across very matter-of-factly. One of the things he likes to say is, you'll quit on yourself before I quit on you, when he's working with a player. Meaning, I have all the patience in the world. I'll never stop believing in your talent and your ability to maximize it. The only way this stops is if you say, it's not going to happen for me, and you walk away. And I think that resonates with players a lot, because it's someone who's genuinely invested in their development. regardless of where that development takes him. The other thing is, he's also incredibly well prepared and a hard worker. And I know earlier you were saying, well, guys that don't have a lot of experience, how does that translate? You know, is it a training ground for coaches? I think one thing players are really good at is smelling BS. Mm-hmm. They know a BS artist when they see him.
Mm-hmm.
And they know when you don't know what you're talking about. And for Igor, he's so well prepared in terms of watching film, in terms of knowing tendencies, in terms of being a creative offensive mind, in terms of knowing defensive schemes and all that. Even if a player disagrees with what coach wants me to do, they see like he's not just talking out of his rear end. No, there was a thought process and there was a preparation there, and they respect that because, again, this guy works hard. But much like I said, he's positive without being corny. He's also an immensely well-prepared, hardworking guy without being self-aggrandizing. I know we've all seen those guys. Oh, I show up to the gym at 4:30 in the morning, and I left last night at 2 a.m., and all I do is I don't watch TV, and I don't know things that are happening in the world. All I do, like these people who beat their chest about how hard they work. Igor works crazy hard, and he never tells you about it. You'll know when you talk to him. You'll know when we're talking about a play to run or a defensive scheme that we should be using. You'll know, oh, no, he did the math. He did the homework. He knows his stuff. And I think, again, that resonates with people because you feel like it's genuine. You feel like it's not a marketing campaign or a ploy. You see a lot of times with coaches in this league.
Let's go off that. I appreciate your time and your insight. As always, Amin, thanks.
No problem.
Good stuff. There's Amin El-Hassan answering it. We're late here. We got to get to Haley. She's down at the ballpark and then Goody at the movies. I'm Brad Sismat. All right, let's go to the ballpark. We'll have Goody at the movies here in about 6-7 minutes. Haley Stasiak from Sports360AZ.com is there. The Diamondbacks losing last night. They've taken 2 of 3. They're trying to keep the streak alive of a winning series. But they have big news today off the field, getting on the field, an injury update. Now let's start there, Haley, as they get ready for today's game. What's the latest with Steven Souza Jr.?
He is back in the lineup, batting fifth. He'll be playing right field today. Just saw him down here tossing a few baseballs around, getting warmed up. He'll be making his D-backs debut. So exciting stuff. Troy Lovello said before in his media availability that it's good to see a guy get off the DL, obviously, with Robbie Ray's strained oblique, Tywin Walker out with his UCL, Jake Lamb's rehab getting set back a little. It's a different change of pace than what they've seen.
What's new with Lamb? You said his rehab set back a little. What's new on that front?
He was diagnosed with some elbow tendonitis in the last couple of weeks, and so they kind of shut him down for a couple of days, getting him back into that. He's not likely this weekend, but he's on the right track, Lovello said, and should be back soon.
In terms of Robbie Ray, the injury there, they put him on the 10-day DL. If you look at the rotation, what are their options? What are they looking at? Is this going to be short-term? Is this going to be long-term?
With a strained oblique, you never know. It's a grade 2, so it's a moderate. A lot more muscle tenderness there. And, I mean, like I said, it's going to vary between person with a strained oblique. So they are planning on having Chris Medlin come up from AAA Reno to start in Ray's place tomorrow. Lovello said that he's been held off from his starts in Reno. He was going to be there for bullpen depth, but they've decided they like what they've seen out of him so far this year. He's been executing game plans, Lovello said, and they felt like he had the stuff to get the start on Friday.
Have you gotten a feel? I know that it's been all about the Dodgers. We had Gonzo on the show, Haley, earlier this week, and he talked about how this week was a litmus test, and then he really got into the Houston series. I know Verlander is throwing on Sunday against them, but do you have anybody talking ahead about Houston and what to expect this week, the World Series champs coming to town?
Well, I mean, it's Chase Field history, back-to-back series with the National League champs and the American League champs. Lovello was asked that this morning in his availability, and he said they like the challenge of it. They like embracing the fact that these are two tough teams, and he said, yeah, the Dodgers are injury-ridden right now, but it's the L.A. Dodgers. And just having that atmosphere in here, obviously, you've got all the beat L.A. signs throughout Chase Field being waved around. And then to have the defending World Series champs in town, you don't get to see the Astros here in Phoenix much. So the Diamondbacks are embracing this challenge of having these two teams here this week.
All right, good stuff there. There's Haley Stasiak down at the ballpark. Diamondbacks with a day game against the Dodgers, and then Houston comes in. Before we break here, I do want to get into this a little bit about the stadium, because I've been asked, you know, is this it? Are they moving? Do I think that they're going to move? Yeah. Do I think they're moving out of Maricopa County? No. Look, a memo of understanding that they had yesterday that came out, that's just the first step. There's a long, long, long ways to go. When people talk about the ballpark and the Diamondbacks being down there, I don't think they like, I know they don't like being down there, but they're never going to say so publicly. And they the side story here is not the size of the building. That's a lazy narrative. When people go down there, well, it's just too big. No, that's not the story. The story is the Diamondbacks have done research study after research study on the size of the stadium on one part, which is very small, comparatively speaking, to where it's located. If there's people that say it needs to remain downtown, those are people that live on the west side or just want to be in downtown. The general population of Maricopa County is sprawling east. Maricopa County, the center of it now is the 101 202 freeway at Tempe Marketplace, where the Cubs facility is on one side, Tempe Marketplace is on the other, Rising FC Stadium, and a big hole in the ground on the northeast corner. The big hole in the ground is the spot where the Diamondbacks want to be. It hasn't changed. And they'll deny it because there's other parts and other parcels that they're looking at. The arms race here in Phoenix of getting the next stadium built. If you go down to the swap meet by the airport, right along the light rail line, that's a piece of property that a lot of people are lining up for. I think Rising is lining up for that property, or those people have approached Rising. They've approached many people. I think there's some areas around Papago Park, right by Scottsdale State, or not Scottsdale State, by Phoenix Muni Stadium, that there's some land people there that are trying to push it and make it work. And I believe that Arizona State is looking long and hard. There's a little note this week about maybe some fringe football league playing over at Sun Devil Stadium. Well, a fringe football league fills up more dates. Right now, Sun Devil Stadium, they charge advertising dollars to be there for 8 games, and that's it. It sits there empty for the other 300 and some odd. Ray needs to change that, and Ray knows he needs to change that. So the Diamondbacks, their research shows they are not getting people Monday through Thursday to come from the East Valley downtown. It's a lot of business side here, but this is a fact. When people spout attendance numbers, now it's not sold out. It's not because people don't want to go. It's too damn far. And it's too convenient to sit at home and watch the game on TV. If you're in Queen Creek, there's not a chance you're going to go back on the 101 or the 202 to get down to the ballpark. It's not happening. It's not happening. And so there's much more to this from a business point of view than just, well, the stadium's too big. Much more to it than that. Good Eat the Movies is next. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, at least to this point of the day and week, changes by the minute. We're going to have some fun now with Goody Coons. Bill Goody Coons, chief film critic for Gannett and AZ Central. All right, we're going to start with a little TV stuff because you've had your background in television and you love watching sports. Jason Witten gets Monday Night Football over Kurt Warner by a nose and is the new Monday Night Football guy. What does this, not that Kurt's got a big nose, what does this do for you in terms of Monday Night Football? And is Warner better than Jason Witten?
Evidently, Warner doesn't have a big enough nose. to use your logic, I don't know. I mean, I he's a dark horse, right? I mean, he's kind of like Roma. Everybody's like, oh my God, you know, this guy's never done it before. He's not gonna, you know. And he turns out to be one of the better, you know, analysts around. Some people don't like his style, but you can't say he doesn't know what he's doing. He clearly prepares, but he was a quarterback. Who knows with Witten? I mean, Witten seems like a smart guy, but it's hard to know. It's hard to go on. I think that, you know, he's played more recently than Warner. Warner just got elected to the Hall of Fame. They said maybe he would have a little buzz there, but, you know, Witten's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I don't know what goes into these things. Maybe Warner would cost too much. I mean,
that's true.
That certainly could be a big thing, particularly with ESPN. Who's, you know, been having some money troubles of late. I like Warner, I think he's good. I think he's solid. I don't know that he seems almost ideal to me. Like you'd need a third guy almost. You need somebody. Warner's got a great personality, but he's not. I mean, the word that I keep thinking of is solid. You know what I mean?
He's not going to go after somebody. Kurt's not going to go after somebody, and he's not a former Dallas Cowboy. I think there's something about being a former Cowboy, even though I can't stand front-running bandwagon Cowboy jumping fans. There's something to that, I believe, in the hiring process.
There must be. Maybe they felt like they had such a good run with Romo. I have to believe that, much like they did with Romo, that they've tested him. I mean, you know, that they've had, you know, as it turned out with Romo, he had gone to Jim Nance's house and recorded all this stuff and done all these things. And you know that. I mean, I'm sure you've sat in on some of those things where they show you a game and you kind of announce it yourself to see what you got. I was a little surprised. I was a little surprised that he retired, frankly, but I know that he's been playing for about 27 years. I don't know. And I don't know what it means for Warner. I mean, I assume he'll just keep doing what he's doing. I also don't know that it's, you know, Monday Night Football is not what it once was.
Correct.
Let me say this. I don't think it's like Warner and everybody else. I think Warner, again, I think he's very good. I really like listening to him. He's smart as can be about football. But I don't think that you ever think, oh, I'm going to tune into a game to listen to Kurt Warner.
That's true. And I'm one of those that I don't care who does games. I think you and I are similarly minded in that regard. All right, I've got four movies in front of me that I'm supposed to ask you about. I'm going to do it.
Let me
go ahead.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, sure.
Can we just quickly talk about the Diamondbacks since I started following them?
Oh, here we go again. Bill's put this out on social that you've adopted them this year. You're all in. Your family's all in. You're forcing them to watch every game and keep score, right?
And how are they doing? Do they have the pass? And I have to say, the only reason I bring it up today is because I'm actually going to the game today. So who knows what this may be.
This is the end of it. It's the end of it.
Yeah, no, this could be it.
All right, so let's go through these movies. There's four of them in front of me. Which is the one that you think is the must-see movie of the week of these four?
It depends on what you want. I mean, the RBG, which is a documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, is one of those movies that will be seen the least by the people who would benefit from it most. You know what I mean? But then I think also that I really like horror movies, and Ghost Stories is kind of a good almost old-timey kind of horror movie. It's not gory at all. It's just more creepy, and it kind of sneaks up on you. So I think probably those two, although Disobedience is getting all the buzz because of a very hot scene between Rachel McAdams and Rachel Weisz. So, you know, there's an unusual number of good movies this week. So,
okay,
and, of course, everybody's got to go see Avengers for the sixth or seventh time, too, I guess. So.
You know, they're seeing it in record numbers, but they're not coming out. They're saying this is the greatest thing ever. So I get it. The box office is going crazy. All right, of these four movies in front of me that I'm supposed to ask you about, and I'm not going to have time to ask you about all four, which of the four would you say don't even bother to go stand in line, if there's even a line?
Well, there's a movie called Bad Samaritan, and it lives down to its name. It's so bad. But I'll say this. This movie you slog through it, and it's terrible, and it's terrible, and it's terrible. And then with about 5 minutes left, there's one great line delivered perfect. It's so, I like sat up. I was watching it, you know, on a computer because I just had a streaming link, and I like bolted up, and I was like, it was like it was from a different movie or something. And then it just went back to being terrible again. So I mean, if movies consisted of one line of dialogue, this would be great. But unfortunately, there's, you know, an hour and a half of horrible movie around it. So. But that was unusual. You don't see that very often.
All right, stay away from that one. Okay, I basically had you reference three of the four movies, but you haven't said one word about Tully. So give me a few words on Tully.
Tully, I really liked. It's Charlize Theron. Well, one thing, it's Jason Reitman and Diablo Cody, who did Juno and Young Adult. They're back together again as director and writer. She plays, Charlize Theron plays a mom who's just completely snowed under, and she has another kid, and her rich brother hires her what's called a night nanny, and they kind of just come into your house, and they take care of the stuff, and they wake you when you need to feed the baby. and her life gets better. And then, but how, why is it getting better? What's going on with this night nanny, and what is their relationship like? And it's really fascinating. And there's some twists in it that you may or may not see coming. I don't know, but I don't want to load that up too much. There's been some talk of like, oh, it's, you know, it's not a fair or accurate depiction of postpartum depression, but I don't see how that's, I mean, that's different for everybody. Mm. I mean, that's one of those things that's not a blanket. Everybody, I think people do experience that differently, and some don't experience it at all. So I don't really think that's a valid criticism. I like it, and Charlize Theron is terrific in it. It's sort of funny, but it's also, there's some tricky stuff in there. So, I mean, I just sort of left that out of my list. There was a ton of movies this week, but I'd forgotten that. I would say that one might be the safest bet for most people.
All right. Because we don't want to waste money, and we're just not into that. All right. Enjoy your day at the game. We'll let you go. See you later.
All right.
Here's Bill Goody-Kunz, Goody at the Movies, going to the Diamondbacks. He is the good luck charm. When they start losing, and they will, we're going to bring Bill on, and we're just going to hammer him. We're going to crush him and remind him of his fandom, and it's his fault. So, Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There is plenty of content, pro, college, high school, college, pro, makes no difference to us. Things we see around the great state of Arizona, and also with a national spin, too, when there's a story that is worth addressing. Edwin Rodriguez is our chairman of the board today. Edwin always crushes, well, not always. He crushed it today, I think. And, of course, Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president, or nothing or everything. Have yourself a great day.